Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am Ross Bolin here with Barrett Dudley to discuss everything you need to watch on TV, in the movies, on the streaming services. Mr. Dudley, today we're diving into Dave.
That's right.
Season 2, finally.
Yep.
But we're talking about a lot. I watched a movie last night.
Oh.
A Steven Soderbergh movie on HBO Max.
I love Steven Soderbergh. I love HBO Max. I have not watched this yet.
And also the trailer for Many Sons of Newark dropped, which we have
Many
to discuss
Saints
as well.
Of Newark.
Saints of Newark.
There are lots of Sons of Newark, check. But,
sure,
But no, this is Saints of Newark.
Excuse me. But Chuck, I watched the first three episodes, Chuck, of Dave. And
yeah, what'd you think, Chuck?
I got to the third one.
Yeah.
That, you know, you mentioned a couple weeks ago when you first dove in that the first couple episodes were a little darker, more depressing, wasn't much to enjoy. I feel like Dave got his Bo Burnham.
Hold on, Russ.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but there is a thing on here that is ticking down with red.
That's not good. Jared, come here.
Oh, never mind. I'm sorry for the interruption. That is the track. That's the intro track, I believe.
Oh.
Ticking all the way down. I worried because sometimes the Rodecaster, the memory card, it displays the memory card.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I wanted to make sure that wasn't the memory card saying you have 30 seconds left to talk. Okay, I apologize.
Good?
Sorry, Jared. Sorry, producer Jared.
Okay,
thank you.
Just cut that part out. Not really.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got through the first two, and you were right.
Yes.
They were not very enjoyable. It was like his Bo Burnham, should I be joking at a time like this, his two episodes of like, I just don't think he had any comedy left in him there for a little bit. And so the first one is all about K-pop and
Was I right?
Korea.
Was this Uncut Gems, but on Dave?
A little bit. It was very, very stressful.
Is that the vibe of Uncut Gems that I keep hearing about?
Uncut Gems is far worse in terms of stressfulness.
God,
at least Dave has a little levity. Like Uncut Gems was just nonstop hell. But yeah, it was not, you know, relaxing.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, God. The whole first two episodes, you're just like, fuck, dude. Like, get your shit together.
Yeah.
And then in the third one, he goes back to just full season one of Dave comedy. And what ends up happening, Chuck, is him and Benny Benassi, one of the most...
Benny Blanco. Benny Benassi.
Different Benny,
yeah.
One of the most...
EDM legend, though. Shouts to Benny Benassi.
Benassi, one of the most prevalent producers in music. Benny Blanco.
Satisfaction.
There you go.
Satisfaction. Okay, sorry.
And Dave have this bromance.
It's a bromance that
can only be compared to when you're like 12 years old and you're a little boy and you and your friends are just so fucking silly and stupid and immature that you're just doing silly crap all the time to entertain each other, making up nicknames, calling each other Chuck.
Are they calling each other Chuck or Chick or Check?
Chuck. I turned on subtitles because I couldn't take it anymore.
I did
first
too.
First couple times they say it, they're like, Chuck.
I did too, but I think, doesn't he call him Check because he calls the beef ground Check instead of ground Chuck?
But then they just go to Chuck. And it's Chuck the rest of the
episode. I feel like I'm hearing all iterations of it.
And I swear to you.
You guys can get at us on the cord. The cord is strong, so I know you'll have our back on this.
Also Twitter.
I don't care about subtitles. I feel like they are waffling in between. I feel like it's almost part of it that
Chick,
it's Chick, Check, Chuck.
Chick. I'm telling you, the first couple times they say it, you're right. You're like, did he say Chuck? But the rest of the time, it's pretty clear chucking back and forth. So what happens is Dave and Benny get like real gay together. There's no other way to put it. And
it's very playfully gay together.
I think that is
totally acceptable to say. And they even say it. They are having a very homoerotic experience together here.
Yes.
Where they are just like
fucking
exploring each other and fucking around.
Their bodies and,
like,
and their asses and twerking and seeing how sexy they can look and making fun of each other's dicks.
They're doing, simulating sex acts. They're
fucking each other pretend, yeah.
Yeah, they're
just two men.
They're having a time and they are just, it's homoerotic. That's what it is.
Just no holds barred
no
in their little male friendship anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They are exploring all the frontiers of what a male friendship can be, essentially, right up until a certain line, right? Like they're not as they're trying to explain to Gata and Gata's friends, it's not a gay thing for them. But maybe it kind of is.
Right. Like
like
it's the exact
it's
the
area.
Seinfeld thing, like, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we're being gay, but we're not gay. And it's just a hilarious, like, the look, straight dudes and homoerotic stuff have always clashed, right? Especially as our culture has been so homophobic over the course of the last however many years.
Yeah, I mean, it all plays into the toxic masculinity thing,
yeah,
right?
Of course, it's which is him flipping that on its head right here and making you watch him and Benny hump each other for 20 straight minutes. And then eventually, Dave gets a big wad of gum, and he puts it over Benny's asshole, and he's going to blow a bubble by farting. And then the gum gets stuck because it turns out they get distracted for a little bit. Benny doesn't take it off. Dave's like, why didn't you take it off? Okay, I'll use peanut butter and olive oil. Next thing you know, Gata and his boy are coming over. They're having to explain, like, the difference between, like, black bromance and white bromance. They're like, you ever seen a black bromance?
Yeah,
and the guys can't come up with one. They're like, oh, Moonlight. And he's like, that's just a romance, not a bromance. It was just a really cool look at, like, a very funny, very weird, very strange, awkward look at, like, the way straight male friendships work in, you know,
across
different cultures.
Yeah, essentially. And yeah.
That was ridiculous. One of the, like you said, you told me, you were like, prepare for episode 3. It's going to be maybe the most ridiculous one you've seen. And it was. He raised the bar, his own bar.
Yeah. And also, he tees you up because the first two episodes are so just like off the rails, dark
and depressing,
and like stressful and depressing. You kind of not, you know, like in the scheme of things now, it makes sense that like he's kind of able to rescue himself with this little sleepover camp that he has with Benny, right? It kind of brings him back down to his zero almost, right? Like Dave is a silly, funny dude that wants to have these types of like weird little bromances and experiences.
Yeah. Kind of fuels him, right? Like he's had writer's block, all these creative issues. You feel like this episode is probably the one that's going to get him back into the swing.
Yes, cuz he's just able to like let loose a little bit and so it actually makes sense as the kind of the coda to the first two episodes where like nothing good happens essentially.
And then at the end of this one.
Yeah, man, it was wild, and like I said a couple weeks ago, like I don't think any other show could or would try to pull something like this off. You know,
pretty fucking hard to do.
It really was like it even had that nice like parallel and kind of juxtaposition, right? Of the friendship that he has with Benny is much much different than the friendship that he has with his manager, who's Mike.
And even with Gata, yeah.
And with Gata, and as we saw in a previous episode, with Els, too, right? Like, they're all these different avenues for friendship, and like, the one that he has with Mike is, like, probably the most typical, the way we think. They have a kind of surface-level birthday conversation, right? Like you might.
Yep.
But neither one of them delves into, like, what actually happened to them that day.
Which both of them had incredibly unique experiences.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And so like that's kind of that's what we experience in a lot of ways. That's what a lot of our friendships look like. And then it almost kind of like framed it up like, what if you could just have these, what if you could, like Benny says to Dave, like just totally be 100% yourself, no holds bar, no judgment.
Didn't have to worry about what anybody thought.
Any fucking thing you wanted to do or say with a buddy like this. And it was just like it was a very interesting kind of topic to explore, and again perfectly foiled with Gata and his buddy telling you, like, laying it out for you, like, why you don't see that with black dudes.
Yes.
And why white dudes are kind of able to do that, and why, because of like culture and history,
It doesn't work the same way.
And there are levels to that shit, for sure. Exactly. And so it was a very, a wild, silly, like, I'm sitting here laughing about you describing the peanut butter and the gum and Benny's butthole. And at the same time, just like a lot of episodes of Dave that we really love, it's super layered. There's a lot there to dissect and sift through and kind of soak in. So
let me read you the episode info off of Rotten Tomatoes, okay? Because it's fucking perfect. Dave and Benny's friendship blossoms in strange and unexpected ways, leading them to confront questions of privilege, race, sexuality, and dermatology. Meanwhile, Mike's isolation deepens, and a chance encounter sheds light on the root of his anger. Mike is just struggling out there, man. He's got an observer watching him inappropriately dispose of packing peanuts, which he doesn't like.
Yeah,
he gets into this whole back and forth with this dude. They even get into like the filming people during conflict thing, which became huge in 2020, 2019 too. And it will be forever, the rest of our lives. I love the line from Gata where he's like, I can't remember if it was episode 1, 2, or 3, where something happened. Oh, a cop grabs their Korean friend when they're in Korea, the intern that they have in Korea.
Yes, yeah.
And he's like, man, I'm from the hood. Filming the police is automatic. Like, they have just so many good lines in this show. And the other thing, one of the other things I thought of during this first three episodes is like, what is the writing team for this show?
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine it's pretty diverse and pretty mixed, and
I wonder how much
because one of the things that I feel like the show does really well is, you know how we've talked about with Sopranos, how sometimes it's almost like they can't seem to figure out how to write for black characters.
Yes.
And that's largely due to the fact that they didn't have any black people in the writer's room.
Yeah, they did a terrible fucking job representing black people on The Sopranos.
Well, Dave is the opposite. Like, everybody seems so authentic. Like, I feel like I feel like Gata is giving you exactly how Gata would talk and what he would say and think in this situation.
Right.
Same with Benny, same with Dave, same with Mike, same with Els. Same with Allie. Like I just, you get the sense that everybody is well represented in the writer's room because it all feels so natural and people talk like the way they talk and, you know, that seem to have their experiences kind of accounted for and represented.
Right. I'm looking at the writers for season two here, okay? There was one writer per episode.
Credited, right?
Credited. So, which I'm not typical. Sure if that means they're still operating with a writer's room. Is that typically how it works? One writer
gets credited for an episode almost always on TV.
Okay, or it'll be a couple, but there's a lot of people that are involved in the writing. Okay, so but it looks like Dave didn't write any of season two, where he wrote the first episode, the third episode, the sixth episode, and the 10th episode of season one.
Interesting.
So I think that was probably, part of the reasoning, right? If they were going to delve into even more areas and try to be even more authentic about all these things involving race and sexuality and dermatology, then they needed to have as many voices as possible to make that happen. And so, like, for instance, the first one, International Gander, is written by Lee Sung-jin.
Okay. So,
so I'm assuming she had or he had the wherewithal needed to discuss K-pop
and
Korea.
Yeah.
All the different ins and outs there. I didn't like how they brought in the K-pop, the dark world of K-pop. Because, frankly, I didn't really know anything about that, and now I don't want
to
Google.
I did not bother to go look that up.
I don't want to.
I couldn't tell if it was a joke on the show or if that was a legitimate thing,
right.
And I'm just letting it slide. I'm just not going to delve any further into that.
We got our own fucking exploitation issues in America in the entertainment industry to worry about. But
yeah, we got Britney Spears, man.
Yeah, man. Let us
worry about that. You guys worry about K-pop.
We're over here freeing Cosby and keeping Britney in the conservatorship.
Y'all got
to handle your own problems in Korea right now because we got enough shit on our plate. But interesting about the writers. And I just keep watching the show and because they do seem to very authentically represent everyone that's on it, right? Mm-hmm. You don't feel like any character is being written by somebody who it shouldn't have been written
right.
by. Like, you're like,
right.
this person would never say that, or this type of person would never say that. So, which makes it all the more impactful, I guess, when they do the darkness and when they do the levity and the silliness. And it's like that concept that the third episode takes on of being able to be you without worrying about anybody is something all of us battle on a fucking day to day, dude. Like, how many times do you question not making a joke or doing something in front of somebody because you're not sure how they take it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the dream when you're like, and you don't have that as an adult. That's kid friendship, bro. At least for me. Like, when I was a little kid, that was when it was like, I don't really feel like I ever had to change the way I acted around my friends, really.
Right. Right.
As an adult, when you're a fucking weirdo and you have all your own issues, and we all do, then it's a totally different ball game in terms of like how deep you want to go, and everybody's got their own issues, and it's just like this fucking, the world is so serious and there's so much responsibility, which to the point of Gata and his boy, that's why that shit doesn't happen anymore, fam. Like, you and me can't just go in the backyard after this and start sticking gum in each other's assholes because we have work and bills to pay and shit. Like, It's different. And anyway, I'm loving it. I'm super excited to watch episode four. We'll discuss. I think we'll have two more next week.
Yeah, we'll catch all the way up. Episode four is out. I don't think either one of us have watched it.
We have not.
But we'll get all caught up.
It's called Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So.
I know you watched kind of like in succession these first three.
Uh-huh.
Did you? And we're sitting here. We're giving lots of love to Dave after this third episode. So the first two have you know kind of
they feel better now.
They feel better now. After the first two, were you like, what the hell?
I was pretty concerned
yeah.
with, look, because again, I touched on it. It's the Bo Burnham problem. And I went through this last year as a content creator. Like there was a 6 month period where I wasn't making many jokes, fam. I was mostly burning people. And there wasn't anything funny to fucking talk about. Like there was going to be a lot of content that came forth from 2020 that was darker, more serious, focused on societal issues.
Mm-hmm.
My concern with Dave being that it's one of the funniest and most unique comedies I've ever seen on TV, was that he would be stuck in that dark-ass rut
right.
for the whole season.
Yeah, yeah.
And he pulled out about as hard as you can. oh, my God, dude. Like, but, okay, so let's talk about the ending of episode three, because it was really important. Dave ends up in the situation where he's at. At one point, he's at Benny's house, and he's got Kendall Jenner there and Bieber's wife and some other chick.
That's episode two.
Episode two,
yep,
and
yep.
And you get the feeling that, like, you know, obviously things with Allie, she's not in the episodes, the first two.
Right.
She gets brought up a little bit here and there.
Yep, he keeps thinking he's going to see her at the party.
He just clearly doesn't know what he wants right yeah. now with a relationship. Does he want to get back with her? Does he want to try to date famous model chicks that
like, don't want to date him?
At one point, one of the girls tells him that Kendall might be into him.
That, yep.
And
yep.
he believes her, and then they mock him.
So that scene, we talked a little bit before we potted today about how producers of the show include both Kevin Hart and, of course, Scooter Braun. That's how Bieber got into the show last
season
year,
one.
And it's how Haley got into the and Kendall got into the show this year
season
because
two.
They're all running in the same crew, essentially.
Yep.
Scooter is Bieber's manager, but they are all like... they're all friends. They all run together, essentially, as like a Hollywood crew.
I wonder, does Scooter manage also Lil Dicky? I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, that's a good question. Anyway, it feels like they had the opportunity to get Haley and Kendall in an episode, and they shoehorned it in. Because that, I understand how that piece of it worked for the episode.
It is quiet, by the way. Lil Dicky, Scooter Braun, that's his manager.
Okay.
Yep.
Good to know. It plays out in the end where he kind of like leaves this party where he was looking for his ex-girlfriend, where things are not going his way, where like his friends are kind of ditching him, and he's like sinking into himself and uses this like, well, sometimes if I just like walk up into a crew of young people, they're like, oh shit, that's Lil Dicky, and I can take home a chick.
And he does it.
And that follows, right, the kind of getting mocked by Kendall fucking Jenner.
Yes. So those two pieces were important because he takes that chick home. He gets in the auto-tune room with her,
mm-hmm.
The recording room. And if you remember that first, we see him and Allie do the like the say something into the auto-tuner.
Yeah, that's right.
So it brings. He tries to recreate this moment where he knew he loved Allie with a new girl.
Man. Okay. I forgot about that scene.
It was really, really, really well done because, first of all, that beat.
Great.
I want it.
Great note.
I need it. I don't know if it's a song he made at some point ever, but like that beat makes me feel shit when nobody's even saying anything over it. And then you and I have got to buy an auto tuner that looks fun as shit, and we could probably make a hit. What the fuck? Everybody sounds amazing on that thing, and maybe T-Pain did ruin music. I'm just kidding, T-Pain. I love you, Usher. Fuck you, dude. And it drew this. It's a beautiful thing. Everybody feels this. Male, female, straight, gay, doesn't matter. When you lose somebody in a relationship that's special to you and you're still going through the grieving process, the mourning process, moving on with your life, you sometimes subconsciously, sometimes on purpose, like Dave does here, directly try to recreate the magic you had with that person with somebody else. And it never works because that's not how anything fucking works. Each person is different. You got to find your own magic with the new person.
Yeah.
And what Dave finds here, and I want to know what you thought about this. They show two ways it unfolds with the girl that he took on the date. The first is he does the auto-tune, and he's like, this didn't work. I couldn't recreate it. He sends her home. But then they show another iteration
yeah.
where she stays. Which one happened?
The one where she stays.
Okay, so he hooked up with her.
I took away from that. He's sitting there, and in that moment, plays it out all in his mind. Like, if he kicks this girl out,
then what?
Then what?
Yeah.
He goes to his VR cum station
and falls out the window, jacking off.
Because of there's an ant problem at this house. Let's not forget that.
Forget about the ant. And that was a beautiful shot, by the way, episode when he takes her to the room and the chair spins and there's the ant on the top of the chair or whatever. Oh, yeah, was that episode two?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, though, that's like they find these ways to make another level. Like they could have just got up and walked off and that would have been it. The chair spinning and you're like, cool shot. But the ant is on the chair too.
Yeah.
It was the fucking rat at the end of The Departed, except it didn't suck.
So then I think he like just kind of visualizes that and is making that decision like and is like, okay, let's just go through with this because this is the better option.
So then episode three, at the end of it, he ends up back with Allie, and he goes over to her house. She's on painkillers because she had the mole removed from her back, which again is just supposed to remind you like how close these people were with each other.
Yeah.
And it really is that level of like the same weird physical shit Dave had with his friend he had with Allie, and that's the kind of guy he is, man. He's just a fucking weird dude, you know?
Yeah.
And Allie and him, like, I didn't really know what I expected when he went over there. I can't really recall how they broke off. What it was. I think she was sick of his fucking art shit, his musician shit.
Yeah, pretty much.
And trying to live that lifestyle. So he goes over there. She's all hopped up on painkillers. And the next thing you know, they're getting along again. She's kind of wonky. She's drinking wine on the PKs. And she gets in the bathtub and exposes her breasts. And it's this weird thing where Dave's like, I don't know if I should look at him because he's so fucking immature about sexuality. It's hilarious. And then he pukes into the open wound on her back, and the episode ends.
Yeah.
And that's the show. That's how they do their thing. Like I said, really have been looking forward to getting to watch it. Three episodes in.
Well, I'm sure glad you did, Chick.
Yeah, rough too, Chuck. But the third one was really funny, Chuck, and I enjoyed it. So this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Today's episode of OCC brought to you by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or that's preventing you from achieving your goals? Look, for all of us, life presents challenges, circumstances where we're either hurt or struggling, or 2020 happens. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online, broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. As a guy who's been going to therapy for many, many years, I cannot tell you how helpful it is in terms of getting your day-to-day and your life and your emotions all where they need to be. The service is available for clients worldwide on BetterHelp. You log into your account anytime, send a message to your counselor whenever you need. You'll get a thoughtful, timely response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. You won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you would with traditional therapy. If you're somebody who's like, God, I'd really like to talk to somebody, but I don't want to have to go anywhere or it's awkward face-to-face, BetterHelp can help. And they want you to start living a happier life today. You can go to their website, see their testimonials that are posted daily at betterhelp.com/reviews, or go to betterhelp.com/dragon. That's betterhelp.com/dragon. To join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Special offer for the listeners of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/dragon. That's BetterHelp.com/dragon. Go today and get yourself some BetterHelp. Yeah, let me review No Sudden Move quickly, by the way.
Well, yeah, what's next on the list, Chuck?
Okay, I watched No Sudden Move, Chuck, and I'll be honest with you, Chuck. The main reason I watched this is because Brendan Fraser's in it. And
that's the main reason?
Yeah,
You're a big Brendan head.
I'm going to read you the cast,
A Brett head.
Don Cheadle, Benicio Del Toro,
right.
David Harbour, a.k.a. Hopper.
Yeah.
John Hamm, Amy Simmets, Brendan Fraser, Kieran Culkin. Hey, Kieran. Bunch of other people. Ray Liotta, Matt Damon, Frankie Shaw. There's all kinds of people in this film.
Yes, yes. And I'm you mentioned already that this is a Soderbergh film, and I'm usually a very, very big fan of Soderbergh.
So, it's set in 1955 Detroit. I won't do spoilers, Barrett, because you haven't seen the film yet. I'm just going to give you my broad thoughts here.
Okay.
It is, let me see the runtime. 115 minutes, all right?
Okay.
So it's
under 2 hours.
Just under what would annoy you, I think. And it's very well done, very well made, very well acted by all of these people. Again, the reason I was most interested is because of the man formerly known as George of the Jungle, who is going through a massive weight gain. He's going to be playing a 500-pound person in an upcoming film. So Brendan Fraser, who already looked like shit, if you haven't been paying attention, he's aged quite poorly. If you put up a picture of George of the Jungle next to Brendan Fraser 5 years ago, you're like, God damn it, dude. Yeah. You didn't do anything to take care of any part of your body. Well, it turns out he was like, fuck it, I might as well play a 500-pound fat guy in a crazy art film then.
So how much weight is he gaining?
I don't know. Obviously not 500 pounds, right?
But I hope not.
But he's big. Like, he looks goofy as shit in this movie, and he's a good actor, and it was just, I don't know why, but he was the main draw. So, once I get past the part that I'm just here for fat Brendan Fraser, the cast of this film is bonkers, dude.
Yeah.
It's like one of those where you're just getting hit with an A-lister every other fucking scene, and it's just amazing, and they're all very good. I will say, it didn't come off, all said and done, as like a game-changing crime film or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of an HBO Max drop that you can watch on a whim, stream it, this is about as high quality as it gets for that type of shit, right? Like that.
Yeah.
It's in film, or it's in theaters too, I think.
So is this one of the ones that's only here on HBO Max for a month, or is this...
And then it's gone, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
But yeah, look, not the best movie I've ever seen by any means, but... Definitely worth watching on the cast alone, and Steven Soderbergh is Steven Soderbergh.
Soderbergh, typically, you know, he this is a guy that has, like, retired on at least one occasion, maybe multiple, but then always is, like, seemingly continuing to do stuff.
He's the Ocean's 11 guy.
I believe that he keeps a... It's either him or somebody else, but I'll run with it. He keeps a... What's the thing where you track everything that you're watching and reading? There's a site that does this, and you can follow people on it.
Oh, fuck, I'm on that. But I can't remember what it's called.
It's slipping my mind right now.
Goodreads?
No, that's for books.
That's for just books.
Anyway, I think Soderbergh keeps his log on there, and a lot of people find that really interesting. And when he does do new stuff... Whether it's you know, the show he did
Barrett, I found it. Sorry, he lists everything he watches and reads on
Letterboxd. That's what it is.
Okay,
right?
And then he also uses his site Extension 765, whatever that is. So I guess he's got a couple places now. This is an old article I'm reading.
But whether it's that show he did for HBO, which I can never remember the name of, I want to say Mirage right now, but that's not it. It's
how recent was this?
Last. Probably 7 years ago.
I'll find it.
Six, 7 years ago.
I'm on it.
Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that...
Oh, the one with Jonah Hill?
No, the one with Sharon Stone.
Looking it up. Go ahead.
He always is trying to bring something new to the table.
Mosaic.
Thank you, not Mirage. So, like, I believe that Mosaic was completely shot on iPhones.
No shit.
The Nick, obviously, like, all handheld cameras. He loves to create and do new things and kind of go wild. So was there anything in No Sudden Move that was like unique? Did anything seem like, oh, he's trying that. He's going for this. He's doing, or was it more just kind of like a Soderbergh film?
It was a Soderbergh film.
Okay.
I don't think he threw in as many different things as he usually does. There's some weird camera work. He has a very specific style.
Style, yeah, absolutely.
And there's these weird scenes where, like, things will seem out of proportion sort of in mm-hmm. different areas. And it's like he definitely brings the artsiness still, but it was just enough of it to also keep it like a regular crime drama.
Okay.
And I'll say this. The piece of this puzzle that makes this movie really interesting is that apparently it is tied to this true story back in the 50s, I think it was, when the four big automakers... were avoiding having to use the Cadillac converter.
Okay, catalytic converter.
The catalytic converter had been invented. It was going to be a massive, massive savior for pollution.
Yes.
Everything pre-catalytic converter, disastrous for the environment car-wise. Big Four, they don't want to fucking have to put this thing in their cars.
Right.
That changes their whole assembly. Everything changes for them. And that's sort of the basis for the crime that takes place. Okay. This crew gets put together for a reason revolving around the Big Four auto industry. So when the film closes, it gives you this scrolling text kind of explaining what really happened there. And that made it even more interesting to me as it's ending. Benicio Del Toro is officially a top 25 all time, one of my favorite actors. Pretty much everything he does, I fucking thoroughly enjoy. I think Sicario is still my fave of his, but it's also like Fear and Loathing, and then just he's so, his screen presence, for example, when he's on the screen and there's three other dudes in the room with him, one of which is Culkin, who crushes, one of which is Cheadle, who crushes, he is still the magnet.
Right. He's magnetic. He has a magnetism about him.
Seeing Culkin, by the way, Kieran Culkin in this, I need this dude in more stuff.
Yeah.
He's a little too Succession-y. but I don't know if that's avoidable anymore for him.
Probably not. I think that's just a little bit, he's so good in that role because
that's him.
That's kind of him.
Yeah.
And that's,
so he brings some of that, which is honestly, it's fun still because you're like, God, I miss Succession.
Yeah.
All in all, it's definitely worth watching. It's, again, because of the straight-to-streaming nature.
I've got an 87% on the tomato meter with a 74% audience score.
That seems quite good.
Where do you put it in that range? Is that the range, 74 to 87?
C plus is my, 75 to 80, somewhere in there. C plus, B minus, good film.
Yeah.
But nothing that's going to, like, rock your socks off unless you really, really love, because I'll say this, it's the story that holds it back a little. It's very well acted, very well shot, very cool, fun to watch, but it's not a compelling enough storyline that you're following to really make it next level. So that's my review of No Sudden Move.
Okay. Well, let's just keep the HBO Max train rolling here.
Let's do it.
I would like to just take a quick minute to recommend to everybody the HBO Max show Hacks.
Dude. It is throwing this at me every day now. It's
Hacks,
like, recommended for you. Hacks. Watch this. Hacks. Why aren't you watching Hacks?
So, Gene Smart is just on this incredible run with Watchmen and then Mare of Easttown and now Hacks. She is in the HBO bag.
Did she get a new agent? What the fuck?
And she crushes all of these roles. And I just want to say, like, we don't talk about this a lot, but, like, you know, with Kieran Culkin, he just has a Kieran Culkin-ness about him that is kind of hard to overlook. Owen Wilson on Loki. He's Owen Wilson, which is what makes him great, is this his Owen Wilson-ness.
Wow.
And there's a little bit of that for all actors, right? All successful actors. They continue to work because people want something that they bring to the table.
Yes.
Tom Hanks,
great example. There's gives you that wholesome fucking feel of like...
And there is something with, about Jean Smart that falls into that same category, which is that she is just so, like, she can be so kind of disarmingly acerbic, right?
What a word.
She's kind of snappy in a lovable way. And she carries that from role to role. And yet all three of these roles that I just mentioned are so different. And, like, she plays a different range of ages in all three of them.
Awesome.
And she... Even though there is that kind of Gene Smartness about each of these characters, she really disappears into each of the roles. I don't watch any of these shows and I'm like, oh yeah, it's Gene Smart. She's just the character on the screen, and she is so believable as every single one of them. This is arguably the most enjoyable watch for her yet, and also the one where she really, really is she's the vehicle for the show. She is the star, and she is holding court. Absolutely incredible.
And she's a Las Vegas comic,
right? Yeah, so the elevator pitch here is that Jean Smart plays Deborah Vance, one of the most famous and successful female comedians of all time.
Okay.
She has had a long-running residency in Las Vegas. She is fabulously wealthy because in part due to her kind of incessant work ethic.
Okay.
The show is beginning to struggle a bit. She is in risk of losing some of her weekend dates.
Ooh.
And so through a series of events and circumstances, a young Hollywood writer who has recently been canceled and dropped from all of her overall deals because of a tweet that she sent out.
Hey, that's relevant.
Essentially gets sent to purgatory in Las Vegas to help Deborah Vance start writing new material.
And try to revitalize the show.
Okay. And so that's the overall plot, but the show dives way deep into, the things that make both of these people tick and where they overlap and how they can bond, because both of them have a lot of demons and a lot of personal stuff that they are working through, trying to overcome, and both essentially trying to be better people, or at least figure out what it is that could make them happier.
Right.
And it falls into this run of shows that we've been on over the last 5 years, like Dave, like Atlanta, like Barry, like Fleabag, where it's really, really, really funny. And it's nice to watch. I'm not stressed out watching this show, but it's also, there are dark moments. There are,
because there's realness inserted.
There's deep stuff. There are some profound things that are investigated and said here. So, the acting is amazing. Jean Smart is just like on her A++ game. And I think it's 10 episodes. They're all about 30 minutes each. I'm about halfway through the season right now. And it will definitely be on my year-end top 10. I can tell you that.
Oh,
right,
shit.
Now.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at Jean Smart's Wikipedia, and this is a funny-ass quote here. USA Today declared Smart, at the age of 69, nice, the queen of HBO,
yeah,
after appearing in Watchmen, Mayor of Easttown, and now Hacks. Yeah, that's a good run. And as Barrett and I have said for probably 4 years now, if you can crush one time for HBO,
yeah,
they will call you,
yes,
the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It is the best network you could possibly have success on. And as Barrett and I have the Euro on in the background, the Swiss have tied the game, Barrett.
Oh, wow.
It's 1-1. Spain, Switzerland, 68 minutes in to the match of the quarterfinal in the Euro. Barrett and I are soccer people. We're very highly cultured and educated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate the finer things in life, like the beautiful game.
Like a bit of footy.
A bit of footy.
Yeah.
Useful footy.
Useful touch.
Okay, so now I have to watch Hacks. This is one that has been skyrocketed into my.
It really has, and I'll shout out. I know we are.
You know, I love comedy.
The 10 episodes are out, and so
you can watch all 10.
People in the Discord were ahead of us on this one for sure. So
the cord is strong.
So I know that we're not breaking news here that Hacks is awesome. I'm here to confirm everything you've heard about Hacks is accurate, and you should watch it.
And to push me toward it, yes.
Yeah, and again, it's like, you know, it's one that maybe earns some discussion, like after you've kind of completed the series. It's not an episode by episode, like, you know, kind of breakdowner, like,
sure,
like Dave kind of appears to be, because it's just so all over the place. But absolutely, just
really is
worth watching and worth adding to your list and throwing on there.
Hacks,
yeah.
And that an HBO Max show?
That is an HBO Max show. Yes, which that's the thing. Now for all these HBO actors, well, the pool just got much bigger and much deeper, because now they're creating even more content that they can call their peeps up for.
You know, Buscemi's sitting by the phone, and everybody from Boardwalk Empire, really, those guys are the ones that most of the Boardwalk guys.
Buscemi's got something coming. Buscemi's about to be in something. He's in that TV show
with Harry Potter.
That's right, with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, yes. Dude. Yes. By the way, I just want to say quickly, Daniel Radcliffe, I know a lot of people think he's weird and like give him shit and they're like, what the fuck, guy? Pick a movie that we like. No, bro, fuck y'all. He gave you Harry Potter for like 20 years. You can watch those over and over for the rest of your life. The dude earned the right to go do literally whatever he wants for the rest of his life. And if that means quirky, funny TV shows with Steve Buscemi, that's what it means.
Yeah.
And all these Harry fans that try to ride this dude into getting something going, like, fuck off.
Have you seen the trailer for this show?
Yeah.
Does it remind you of Almost Heroes a little bit?
It reminds me of a few different things Daniel Radcliffe has done now, where he only picks these quirky, strange little fucking comedies that are almost like...
Yeah.
I don't know. But I do want to move forward to something, the most important thing for today for
okay.
me.
Okay. All right.
The Many Saints of Newark trailer, not Sons.
That's right.
And
on
here's...
Once again, HBO.
Yes, HBO, pay us, you fools. Obviously, this is something you and I have been looking forward to, especially me being a very, very big fan of The Sopranos and having seen the series through several times. You and I are covering The Sopranos episode by episode ad-free on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Free, I'm sorry, friendly to first-timers and rewatchers. You're the first-timer, I'm the rewatcher. I was looking forward to the trailer very much. I was also nervous because, look, man, no, I didn't know what this is. It's one of those things like Zoolander 2, or like you take something great, an OG thing and mm-hmm. you try to build further on it or make a new version of it or a prequel or a sequel or whatever, and it's slippery because if you fuck it up, you really piss off all the OG fans. I watched the trailer and I got chills like almost throughout. A lot of it because of the casting.
Yeah.
I had no fucking idea Vera Farmiga was playing Livia.
Yeah.
And that's perfect casting. I had no idea John Bernthal was going to be in this thing. Our boy Billy Magnuson is playing Pauly.
Okay.
Ray Liotta is in it. Joey Diaz is in it. David Chase's name is splattered all over it, which makes me feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah.
Now I don't know. Now I'm like, all I can do between now and October 1st, which is the release date, is try to tamper my expectations because they're just skyrocketing by the minute.
I mean, this movie has a lot going for it. All the things that you just mentioned, plus we have this kind of incredible piece of the backstory here, where Michael Gandolfini,
the biggest piece to me,
the son of the late James Gandolfini. Is playing Anthony Soprano.
I can't think of another time in history where a late member of a family was then that same character was played by someone else later.
So this is, and you know, you've probably seen the press and the headlines and the articles about how like Michael was like walking around
New York City, Jersey, and Newark,
like, listening to the playback of Tony talking to Melfi.
Mostly their sessions. That's the thing he listened to the most, Melfi and Tony.
To pick up the character and the voice and the...
And the inner workings of his mind, kind of.
Yes, right, like all of that. So it's...
Well, that paid off because watching him move,
and it looks,
talk,
right.
think,
and
watch his fucking wheels turn, watching Michael Gandolfini do the sort of like big dumb animal, but also you can tell he's got some cunning going, which they even bring up.
They're
like, he's very smart. He's a leader in the trailer.
The other thing that's cool about this is that this looks like an origin story. It looks like a Breaking Bad story. It looks like a great mob film. And that's I think that's the thing. You probably heard this a lot in the aftermath of Mayor of Easttown. Maybe you like read some articles or heard some podcasts. When people worry about sequels, the biggest worry is always that they will only do a sequel because the first one was successful
and they want more money.
And they want more money. And that they are just going to come up with something to do a sequel or a prequel about because
The story doesn't necessarily have to be good enough. It's just about getting it done.
The motivation to create more was not because somebody had a good idea for more. It was because we made money on this one. Now let's make more money. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yes.
The question always is, like, does David Chase have another story to tell? Does he have more in the tank? Has he wanted to make a mob film? Is this the perfect packaging for a story that he wanted to tell about young Tony? Like... And by all accounts, that looks to be the case. The other thing is, how long has it been? Like, they've waited forever to do this,
to make sure
that this is right. They didn't just grab this a few years after when Sopranos mania was still hot,
right?
And so that's always the question for me with sequels and prequels and whatever else. It's like, if you have another good story to tell, if you have something, you know, if Brad Inglesby over there, like, has more mare in him, if he has another story that he wants to tell, and she's the perfect vehicle for it, by all means, man.
Then it's okay.
But don't force anything just because this was successful and popular, and now we're demanding, and now we or the network or the execs or the suits or whoever else is demanding more.
David Chase's wife, who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
I have a feeling they waited until Gandolfini's kid was ready, and... I'm also thinking about what you're saying about, like, what was this the opportunity David Chase saw to make a great mob movie? And you and me have spent a lot of our time on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, where we're dissecting each and every episode of The Sopranos, episode by episode, season by season. We're midway through season 3, talking about how much this man pays homage to Scorsese, The Godfather, all the great mafia films. And I think he finally wants to take a crack at it, right?
Yeah, doing a film, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's like half of the damn episodes of The Sopranos where they're either doing a scene that's a direct tribute to something from an existing movie, or they're taking something so similarly stylistic and applying it to The Sopranos, and it's like,
yeah,
it's going to be cool. I mean, what the people who make us mob movies that are good, it's just Scorsese mostly. Like, it's just one fucking guy out there doing it, and if he can crush this, I'm stoked because I love mob movies.
Yeah.
Please, yeah, sir. Can I have some more?
I was with Phil, my co-host on Club Cool yesterday.
Yes, sir.
And he and his wife watched the Sopranos when it was out.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So like he was real young.
Well, Phil's Italian too.
and
the Battaglia family's Italian as shit.
And his wife has never seen it. Many Saints of Newark trailer dropped, and they're like, "Well, it's time for a rewatch." So I'm just saying, this is the impetus for a lot of people have been doing this over the course of lockdown and COVID and the pandemic already.
Yep.
And now that this is imminent and a few months away, like, people are even more excited to go rewatch The Sopranos. So if you've been putting this off, if you've never seen the show, if you watched it in the year 2000 and 2001, and you need a refresher.
You
definitely do, because Phil doesn't remember anything.
Well, Barrett, how many times have I told you?
I told him, I was like, I'm scarred permanently and didn't sleep last night because of the putter episode. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
See, and the thing is, remember how many times on Patreon I've been like, this episode hit completely different. I hadn't watched it in 7 years.
Absolutely.
As an adult,
this show is
a completely different deal.
1,000,000%.
So yeah,
now's the time. Go join us. We've got a huge backlog as you catch up, and then you can
enjoy the rest of it with us
week by week. But we won't be done with the series when this movie comes out. But we will have quite a bit of it under our belt.
We'll be deep into it at that point.
This is October.
October 1st is the drop date. Yes, sir.
So we've got nominally July, August, September. We've got nominally 16 more episodes. So we'll be deep into season 4.
Right.
When this drops.
Almost to season 5 probably. Yeah. Which is nearing the fucking end.
Right.
To Barrett's point, patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. Pick a tier. It's a minimum pledge of what, $5 to get in and enjoy every episode of The Sopranos with us. Every podcast we put out on Patreon is ad free, brought to you by you, our supporters. Patreon is a platform that allows Barrett and I to bring you more content in exchange for your direct support so that we can do our ad-based podcast as well. This regularly scheduled programming we do for y'all each week where we talk about things that aren't The Sopranos, that's basically built on the backbone of what we bring in through Patreon. So we appreciate everybody in the Clam Fam who is on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, supporting the show, making sure Barrett and I can do what we do, and enjoying, hopefully, the podcast with us, because so far we have done 5 episodes of season 3. We are, what is that? Probably 13 in season 1, 13 in season 2, 5 and we're 31 in. Something like that.
31, 30, yeah, I think 31 in. Yeah.
In the 30s. And it has been a blast. As I said, every episode has hit me different than the 6 other times I've seen it. Watching it with one of my best friends who's never seen it is incredibly enjoyable. I would argue it is the best podcast in terms of front to back, the first however many we've done so far that I've ever done. If you like my stuff, if you like what Bolin Media has brought to the table so far, you will love everything on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. We got about 600 people in there with us right now watching.
I tell you what, it's not a surprise anymore, although I guess if I'm being honest, it still sort of is. I'm always like, are we going to have enough content?
Right.
One podcast per episode of the show. In these early seasons, they're not 8 episodes. They're not 10 episodes like we've come to expect today. They're 13 episodes. And yet every time there is like there's so much opportunity and things to discuss and characters to dissect and eras to reexamine. There's so much about the late 90s and early 2000s that is just like mixed up in this story.
If you lived it, you'll love it. If you didn't, you're going to be like, what the hell is going on?
So
then?
That's been really something. Like this show, we obviously chose this one. The last time that we did this was for Game of Thrones. And man, it's equally as rich, I would say.
Yeah, if you enjoyed,
and it does not have 6-5 massive books backing it up. So,
and they don't choke the last 2 seasons, which is tight. If you enjoyed Barrett and I's breakdowns of the Game of Thrones, episode by episode, the detailed breakdowns. You will love what we're doing with The Sopranos. If you're on the fence, we made The Sopranos Season 1, Episode 1 companion podcast on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles completely public. Anybody can go watch The Sopranos Season 1, Episode 1, and then listen to our companion podcast right there.
I think
it's
also on our feed. It might be just on the main feed, I believe.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, at the very top. It's pinned up there.
Well, I mean, on your podcast feed, on your Oysters Clams.
Oh, no shit. Yeah, you can just scroll down on the podcast feed. We posted it. Yeah. You're exactly right. Yeah, if you missed it when we put it up.
You don't even have to go to Patreon to see it.
You're right. Several weeks ago, wherever you listen to our show, it's right there in the feed. Go hit The Sopranos Season 1, Episode 1, then listen to Barrett and I discuss it. I promise you, you will be at the very least slightly intrigued to join us on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles and ride through what I still believe to be the greatest television show ever made, mostly after the Game of Thrones disaster in the final season. So, a lot of good stuff on TV, a lot of good stuff coming out on streaming. We're inundated with quality again, dude. All the musicians are dropping their albums. I feel like 2021, 2022, 2023 are going to be some of the best years for movies and TV we've ever had. So we're happy to have you here with us on OCC. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. We're going to do Dave episodes 4 and 5. See what else we watch.
Yeah, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, we said that. But if we're early week again on a recording, then 5 won't have come out. So we'll just get all the way caught up on 4. But we'll see. We've got some scheduling to work out. I know Monday is a
you're
holiday.
Right, and I forgot we're doing earlier.
We'll have to see what the week holds. But we'll be back next week regardless on one of the days.
Yes, y'all holler at us on social media at Barrett Dudley everywhere, at WR Bolin everywhere, at Oysters Clams Cockles on Twitter and Insta. Is it Clams and Cockles on Instagram? No, Clams and Cockles on Twitter.
That's right.
Oysters, Clams, Cockles on Instagram. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's it. Until our next helping of delicious mollusks
and ziti.
Goodbye, friends.